If you will examine the Maimonides Sefer HaMitzvot, the count, the system of mitzvahs, Tayag mitzvahs, will come across three mitzvahs which are related to the first night of Pesach. First is Pesach, of course nowadays we don't have the Pesach. Then second Matzah, and the third Sikkur Yetzirah Mitzrayim. Morer is not counted as a separate commandment, a separate precept. Morer is included in the precept of Pesach, because there is, because Morer bezman hazeh, when there is no Korban Pesach, no Paschal Lamb, the Morer bezman hazeh is not mandatory, min haperek, min reise. It's only a rabbinic ordinance from which obligates us to eat Morer. While Matzah and Pesach are two independent mitzvahs. Of course, and the third mitzvah is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. I don't want to concentrate on other mitzvahs, because we got too much time, it's quite complicated. Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. We call it Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. I mean, that could be, we could have used many terms in order to designate, so to say, the recital of Tuyukol Agode on the first night of Pesach. Many terms in Hebrew, there's quite a number, a group of terms which would cover Saper, the Omar Tolevincho, the Gadet Tolevincho, the Yenahulein, Amiro, Agode, Situ. However, the Rambam, I mean, calls it the Saper Yetzias Mitzrayim. He used the verb Saper. Saper. Les Saper. If you take the Rambam, I have it, yes. If it's to Matzah, in the Rambam at the beginning, we suffer Yetzias Mitzrayim Beisi Halayla. We suffer. We suffer. Interesting is that the book is not called Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, but it's called Agore. According to the Rambam, it should be called Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the term Lisaper was not coined by the Rambam. You find the term, or you come across the term, in the Agod itself, Mitzvah Olim Lisaper Yetzias Mitzrayim Kol Yisrael Lailo. Mitzvah Mitzrayim, Hola Marbe Lisaper Yetzias Mitzrayim Arzeh Meshubach. Maisi Barab Lezach Mishuya Shoyim Misaprim Yetzias Mitzrayim Kol Yisrael Lailo. The term natami is an invention by my mind. It's much older than my mind is. But it's strange that a book is not called Sipur Agode. Of course, I mean, it could have been called Sipur or Sefer. Basically, it's almost, they derive, both terms derive from Saper. Yeah. But the book is called Agode, not Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. There is something else strange. Saper, again, it's a question of cases now, the grammatical cases. Saper in Hebrew usually comes in the objective or accusative case. Siparti le'es ha'davar hazeh. ויספר משה לישרי חסרי אסכול אשר עושה על השם במצרים. ויספר משה told his father לא ישרי, I mean, whatever God has done to מצרים. אס is always the accusative case. בריש is בור על הכימס השמיים לסורץ. אני כויסיב נכתב, I write a letter. It's always the accusative case. It's a plain transitive verb. There is another form, basically we don't find this form too often. We come across it with reference to Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. The term Tisaper is impossible. The man Tisaper was Nevircho and Venvircho. Eisa Asher is allowed in Mitzrayim. Again, the accusative case. Objective case. Eisa Asher is allowed in Mitzrayim. The scholar Asher is allowed in Mitzrayim. The accusative case. My money there is not my money, but the God itself never uses Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim in the accusative case, but always prefers the ablative case. Leisatir be Yetzias Mitzrayim. Meaning the verb is not a plain transitive verb, but is always accompanied by the base is always ablative in Hebrew. By the ablative case. And usually you know that in all languages, in particular in Hebrew, the case changes the meaning of the verb. It's not just the formal, I mean, the conjunction of the verb with the object in a certain case changes the whole semantics of the verb. The semantics of the verb is determined by the case which follows it. Whoever knows grammar. So, Lesatur Biyutzias Mitzrayim. Mitzvah Leinu Lesatur Biyutzias Mitzrayim. Lechalamah Lesatur Biyutzias Mitzrayim. Maisi Berab Elezer Rab Etafen Voyom Lesatur Biyutzias Mitzrayim. Not really Lesatur Al Edis Yitzias Mitzrayim. Ores Yitzias Mitzrayim. Because he says, Eisa Rosa Hashem Lefarel, Vaisapir Meshem, Yisri Chesne, Eisa Rosa Hashem Lefarel Lechol Mitzrayim. The man to suffer was in Vincho, then Vincho, Eisa Asher is allowed to be Mitzrayim. And, yeah. But the Bala Gode, whoever the author of the Gode was, it's a very ancient text, one of the most ancient texts we have, after Rashi Baal Peh, yes. And the Rambam, and all Lushenim, have never used his reference to the story of to the recital of the story of the Exodus on the first night of Pesach, the term Sipur in the accusative case, but always in the ablative case. Be it serious with that. Now let us just learn, I'll come to it. Let us examine now where is the word of God that we use. Of course, the guide to Levin Chobayim Ahulaymer, Bavoze Osra Adeshem Libetes in Mitzrayim. However, the Vigadito is not a single term or the only term which somehow, is related to Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. V'amarta Levincha. V'amarta Levincha. V'gadta Levincha refers to the Sheni Yedei Yerushal. Bavazor Hashem Libetes in Mitzrayim, Livel Alei. It's actually the tshuva, the answer to the Rosha. Anyway. V'gadot ha-levilcha. What is the Sheni Yedei Yerushal in Michumash? V'gadot ha-levilcha v'imahu leimia bavazor Hashem Libetes in Mitzrayim. V'v'amart ha-levilcha v'chizik yodot sana Hashem Mitzrayim. We don't call the recital of the book of the Agode or the story of the Agode of the Exodus Amiro, but we call it Agode. It's apparently Agode semantically conveys to us something which Amiro does not contain. However, let us see, is it old, this expression Agode? Of course it's very old. The Gemara tells us Daf Kuftes Zayin in our Vetsochim. The Gemara says, Marema said, Shaltinu have inquired, the Rabbon and Rav Yosef, to the scholars of the Rav Yosef's academy, Man domar agadete be Rav Yosef. Who is the one who recites agadete in Rav Yosef's house? Because Rav Yosef was blind, so he couldn't see. Omru Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef himself does it by heart, out of memory. Man domar agadete be Rav Sheshes, I inquired. Rav Sheshes was also a blind scholar. Omru Rav Sheshes himself. So you have agadete already. Of course, you have the agadete with the aleph at the end instead of the hay. And the aleph. This is the usual. The usual, I mean, the Asius Mishalp is the hay of the high, Haskoro, I mean, this is quite usual, shouldn't attract our attention. But the term Agodo is mentioned in the Gemara. My money goes, if you open the book, פרק זיין הלוך ה he gives an outline of the Agoda, in particular of the prerequisite which we have to meet in order, I mean, to fulfill the obligation of Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim. So he has the main elements, the main ingredients of the Agoda, of the Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim, and at the end he says, Udvorim Oelu Kulam, and all those things, Nikroim Agoda, are called Agoda. It means both are correct terms. I mean, the terms which are basically are very old and go back to the Talmudic period or to the Canaanitic period. What's the difference between Agoda and Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim? When you say Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim, it's basically not correct. Because this is, when you say always Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim, when you form a noun out of the verb, you say Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim, means that the verb comes in the objective case always. Because if the verb appears not in the objective case, but in the ablative case, then you couldn't say Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim, you couldn't introduce the genitive here, the genitive smichus. Then you should have said simply Sifrei Bi Yetzias Mitzrayim. But apparently it's for convenience, I mean. So you call it Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim, but whenever you use the verb, so you will never say Resaper Es Yetzias Mitzrayim, but it sounds funny, to my ears at least, to say Resaper Es Yetzias Mitzrayim. Even though, I mean, from a lingual viewpoint, it's a perfect phrase, but you'll say always Resaper Bi Yetzias Mitzrayim. The difference between Agoda and Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim is as follows. It's very simple. When you say Sipur in general, it means a detailed story. If you give just a short message, or you describe, or you portray a situation in several sentences, you will never call it Sipur. Sipur means simply a story. Sipur is a story, basically. And I told you many times that Sipur comes always, Sipur and Sefer, a writer, a scribe, a scholar, and Sofer and Kaun derive from the same root. The Sipur means simply you give the background and you tell the development of certain events. And you point out the high mark of the development, the dramatic elements which were involved, and then how finally the story wound up and reached a peak or culminated and so forth. Sipur means simply to tell a story, a detailed story. Actually, not only in a descriptive manner, detailed, but even an explanatory manner, to explain the causes of why it happened, what precipitated certain events, and what were the results of certain events. Sipur means a complete story both horizontally and vertically, in depth and in width, as to area. This is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And that in particularly when the Sipur comes in the ablative. When you say Lisapur Mitzrayim, you go, why? It's also a detailed story. Not just a sharing. Sipur is never a sharing. Or never an abbreviation, Sipur in Hebrew. Sipur means a detailed story, You don't skip, you don't tell me details. An important detail for me. Yes. Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. But when you use the ablative and you call it Resaper Bi Yetzias Mitzrayim, means more than tell. But Resaper Bi Yetzias Mitzrayim means to explore, to do research, to study. Resaper Es Yetzias Mitzrayim means to tell the story, descriptive manner. Even explaining let's say, the theology and the causal nexus of the story, and even going into detail, but it is just, I mean, a tale. When you say Leisat Eretz Mitzrayim, means a study, to study an inquiry of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Goy Misatrim Yetzias Mitzrayim Kolesi Alayla. What do you understand by it? After all, the most outstanding scholars of Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Shur, Rabbi Lezer Nazari, Rabbi Akive, Rabbi Traf, the most outstanding scholars perhaps in our history, Shem Sim Levrach, Goy Misatrim Yetzias Mitzrayim Kolesi Alayla. You can imagine that he did not just repeat the story 5 times, 10 times. So another question. What do you mean when you're suffering? Well, you're learning. You can simply substitute for the when you're suffering, it's in trying. They study, they explore, they investigate, they examine. Of course, when you examine alone, you couldn't say Misapir. When you examine, I mean, in a group, I mean, investigates, one makes suggestions, the other one, I mean, responds, and so forth, and they exchange ideas, there's a flow of thought, so you call me suffering. What me suffering be it is not right. If the person can tell me suffering yes it is not right, it would be a bit paradoxical. If the person can tell me it would appear paradoxical. Because it means just tell and retell and retell. Makes no sense to tell and retell. And again, I mean, the same thing cannot be told 5 times. You narrate a story once. You cannot narrate 50 times the story. The whole night, and they were very much involved in it. But they haven't noticed, they didn't notice even that they spend the night passed so quickly that the Talmidim, the disciples, had to come and to pull them by their sleeves and say, it's time to go to shul, to be smirash. It was already day after daybreak. So it means they were involved, completely absorbed by the story. This means be it yes, that's right. The ablative conveys it. The accusative or the objective would have never conveyed. I mean, this means when the substance be it yes, that's right. Now you'll say like that. The cholamar the mitzvah alone is subtle be it yes, that's right. You see, the mitzvah is simply it is Mitzrayim, not just to tell a story. Not just to tell a mechanical tale. You have a text, no matter how elaborate the text is. I don't care how elaborate the text is and how many details the text contains and how thorough the text is. As long as on my part it is just the recital of a text, there is no superiority of the time. The superiority means I should explore, I should understand, I should analyze, I should examine, re-examine. Simply, I should be intellectually and emotionally involved in it. The ablative always, the base in general, the base in Hebrew, I mean, wherever there is the base is added, it means, it, many times it is quite characteristic of strength. Ki beyo adishem tzuri lamin. The base is your days. What do you mean, beyo adishem tzuri lamin? God is omnipotent because he's the creator of the world. Instead, to say Yud Hey is Gibor or Chazak, to say Beyo Hashem Tzolam. The base means strength. The base of the adjective means strong, in complete involvement, complete absorption. Whoever knows Hebrew, I mean it's nothing new in that. The adjective means. Leisatavitizmitzrayim means to be absorbed and to be involved, to be complete, I mean, to study and re-study, examine and re-examine, to do research. I mean, of course, it is Mitzrayim, the relevance to us nowadays, it's not just a story of an old event, it is an eternal story, basically. This is Leisatavitizmitzrayim. The whole Amadel is Satya Beatrice with Rabbi Meir, he keeps on the whole night of Pesach repeating the story, telling you, retelling the story, re-narrating the story. No, this is ridiculous. Because I'm trying to, whoever understands better, whoever explores it more, whoever examines it more, whoever derives conclusions, infers from this story. I mean, vis-à-vis our Riva, whoever by analogy actually infers from this story certain conclusions which are relevant to us, to our modern problems, and so forth, are the Mishnah. That's why it's a beast here, that's right. Now, in contradistinction to Sipur, particularly when Sipur is accompanied by the ablative case, Beh, so the word Hagate, to tell, Agadol, means, on the contrary, means a short statement, a very relevant statement, but short. A statement which actually is related to certain highlights, to certain important central events, but does not go into detail, usually. He told very important, very relevant news. Or very relevant, I mean, information. This hadith means, sometimes, many times, means simply to inform. If you inform a person, you advise him, you advise him of certain events which are relevant to him, you don't tell him a long tale, I mean. You simply break the news to him, I mean, in brief terms, I mean. You don't go on telling him a long tale, long tale is, The information will be lost in detail, you see. It's ridiculous. Yes, you are something. Yes. Agode means a statement, terseness, very relevant, extremely relevant. On the contrary, the details are left out. The details. The secondary, of secondary nature, you see. The primary, I mean, actually, aspects are, of course, included in the message, but it's more a message which is related, which is brief in terms, and is related to central events, not peripheral events, you understand? And it is, and very true, because you have, for instance, testimony to testify, and a witness testified before the court. Testimony of Yahadus means the final evidence. There is no evidence which is above testimony, I mean, testimony of witness, you know, that very well. But if one bears a witness, he is in the Yagid Nasar, in community Hebrew, it is community vocabulary, he is bearing a witness or testifying or giving testimony, is called Agodas Edus. Why? Well, I've got to say this, something must consist of relevant information, I mean, it cannot consist of details which are irrelevant and completely have no bearing upon the case which is before the court. So the justice or the dayan has to win the aides if the aides gets off the track. And you know that some people who cannot be exact, cannot be precise, I mean, will tell the court a story which has no bearing on the case, which is the litigation. So you've got to guide him. It means it's a short message, very important, of extreme importance to someone, of course, to the person who is indicted, to the prisoner in the dock. Very important, but short, not long. It means, of course, so basically, a Agodo and Sipur, I want you to understand, are the two poles between which the narration of the Exodus, so to say, swings back and forth, you see. Agoda is the minimum. Sipur is the maximum, even though it's very hard to speak of the maximum. There is no maximum. The sky is the limit sometimes, you see. Agoda means the shortest message. If a person cannot study Sifur Yetzirah Mitzvah, he's intellectually capable, he lacks his scholarship, I mean, you see, I mean, after all, it's intellectual performance. or he doesn't know, he has no time, he's sick, he suffers from it. So there is a minimum which is necessary to tell. A minimum. The minimum is what? Is a synopsis. Basically, the minimum is a synopsis, is the digest of what? Of what? Of the sipur. The agoda is the digest or the synopsis of the sipur. I mean, of course, sipur is very hard to give a digest of sipur, since sipur is almost boundless. It's very vast, okay? Intellectually vast, in depth. It's only vast in area, I mean. What agoda means is the minimum which is indispensable. You see, the mitzvah sipur yetzias mitzrayim, there are certain mitzvahs, certain precepts, which have neither a minimum nor a maximum. There is only, you have to meet certain prerequisites. If you met the prerequisites, so you don't have to add, or there's no need for prolonging the act. I mean, either you fulfill the mitzvah, you discharge your duty, or you don't. Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim belongs to that group of mitzvahs, which is basically, it is up to the person, individual, I mean, to determine the nature of the mitzvah. The mitzvah can be performed with a minimum of effort, and it's also possible to fulfill the mitzvah, I mean, at a different level, at a much higher level, you see. There are levels, various levels to the kiyum mitzvah. Or even, for instance, like a mitzvah of tzedakah. Of course there is a minimum of tzedakah, but actually tzedakah cannot be said it is the same mitzvah. I mean, it depends, first of all, it depends upon the amount I give. It depends to whom I give. It depends upon the urgency. It also depends upon the way how I give. This is very important in tzedakah. Tzedakah is not only how much I give, it's important. But how I give, if I give, I mean, this courtesy and kindness, and I actually have compassion with the person who is in need, and so forth and so on. I mean, it's a different mitzvah, you see. And tzedakah is also, I mean, proportionate to my ability, I mean. The poor man cannot do as much tzedakah as the rich man, and so forth on. So tzedakah is also a minimum, more or less, but there is almost no maximum, there is no ceiling to tzedakah. Not to the amount, if perhaps the amount I give, I mean, Chazal have imposed a certain ceiling, yeah, one-fifth anyway. But as far as the experience, the sympathetic experience with the person who is in need, I mean, this is something which no one could place a ceiling about. I mean, the more sympathy I display, the more compassion I exhibit, and the more comfortable I make the person who has to beg or ask me for a favor, the greater is my mitzvah, the greater is my performance of all. And the same is true of Talmud Torah. I mean, everybody studies, but there are various levels of studies, from the lowest level to the highest. The Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim belongs also into that group. I mean, the Sipur means the mitzvah at the highest level. And the mitzvah contains study and research and deep understanding and insights into Jewish destiny, the destiny of old, our modern destiny of the future. I mean, it involves this involvement, re-experiencing, and so forth and on. The Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is on the question of re-experiencing. Haggadah means the minimum which is indispensable. If you'll take a look in Rambam, when the Rambam speaks, Perek Zayin, before he says, Mitzaseh Sholteiro Lesapir Benissim Venefloi Shnas Lassinim Mitzrayim. Sipur, because this is the mitzvah. The mitzvah, I mean, it actually requires of us that we perform, I mean, our duty, fulfill our duty at the highest level, you understand? But then, he says, Vitzorich in Dalet, he gives already the criteria without which, or the prerequisite, which are indispensable. If I said less, I haven't fulfilled my duty. Masu b'gnusim sayim mishvach, I've got to tell something about slavery or oppression or Jewish suffering, and then I have to tell about redemption. And those things are called Agode. What do you mean Agode? The most relevant, the shortest, the briefest, and the most relevant, compact tale of Cyprus in Israel. If I miss one of the details, not the details, one of those aspects, I have not fulfilled my mitzvah. So Cyprus is Mitzrayim means, I mean, almost the boundless or the vast, it means the study of Yetzias Mitzrayim, or the re-examination, re-experiencing of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Agode means the shortest possible message, which Chacham has prepared for those who are incapable to tell Yetzias Mitzrayim at a very high level. This is the basis. Now let me ask you, what is our Agode? Agode or Sipur? We call it Agode, of course. The text itself is Agode, nothing else. The text itself is Agode. The text is just a frame. Basically, the text is a frame. Agode is nothing but a frame. You, first of all, it is, after all, I mean, it is a frame which you have to fill in. It's basically, the text is just a frame. It means the meaning, the Agode. Because in the text you have Agode Meir Tzara in Mitzrayim, which is gnus, means suffering, slavery, disgrace, what they call historical disgrace. To be a slave means historical disgrace. Then you have Mitzvah Riv David Zohar, you have a Seven Mitzrayim, it's again disgrace, it's another level, it's a spiritual level. Then you have the Gula, the story of the redemption, Arame Vedovi, Rabban Gamliel, and the two chapters of Halo. It basically being what the Ram calls Agore. It means the minimum. We say basically the minimum. If one is ready to fill in, or to explore, to behold a different vision, of course, Kalamar Besavet is Mitzrayim HaRezem Mishubach. But it is correct that we call it Agode, not Sipur, because Sipur is something which is basically endless, which cannot be contained in the books. But whatever is contained in a book, whatever can be pressed into a certain frame of reference, is not a Sipur, it's Agode. Sipur, intellectual and exploration and investigation, and gaining insights into great events cannot be explained in writing. You cannot have a text. Text can just determine the minimum, the principles, or as I said, the frame of reference, nothing else. It's basically is not to be considered Sipur. Sipur is already up to an individual. Each individual has his own Sipur. Each individual understands Agode differently. Each individual depends upon his intelligence more than, matter of fact, it depends more on intuitive approach, upon sensitivity to historical events, and reading between the lines, the ability to read between the lines, than on intellectual, brilliance. It's not so much the intellect which gets involved in Agode, but the heart. But that's why you call it Agode. That's what I want you to understand. In the Agode itself, there's enough space, enough room, to fill in, and to both in depth, vertically and horizontally. It's an elastic. The book of Agode is very elastic. You can stretch it as much as you want. So Agode basically is the text which needs formally the basic prerequisite. And the basic prerequisites in the Agode are three: Gnus and Shvach, means you start with this grace and you conclude this praise, it means slavery, redemption, at two levels, at the level of physical disgrace, slavery sin, redemption, physical, political redemption, and at the level of spiritual disgrace, idolatry, and spiritual elevation, means when you, I mean, our covenant with God, this is not, then Arame Vidovi, the parish of Arame Vidovi, interpretation, and Rabbi Gamliel, basically, it's that form. With Gnus and Shvach, at two levels, at the physical political level and at the spiritual level. In the physical political level, you just state, Avodim Yimifar Mitzrayim, we are slave unto Pharaoh, Vayetzi Hashem Hashem Yachazot, and God has taken us out with a strong hand and out for Tzaham. That's all. Mazmusa Mishvach. Then you have Mitzvah Yisdag and Zohar Yavisim of Mitzrayim, our forefathers who worship the idols, and now God has brought us near Him to serve Him. This means the change from an idolatrous people into monotheistic people. It's also Gnus and Shvach. Then you have the interpretation of Arame Vidovi, which is a difficult section of the God of God. The interpretation of Arame Vidovi, the whole parasha of Arame Vidovi. You interpret each word, Arame Vidovi Yom Tzoyimah. Each word is interpreted by introducing a parallel from the book of Shemes, from the Exodus. You take away Arame Vidovi, the parasha is mentioned in Deuteronomy. So you take the parasha and you take almost each word and you interpret the word, and in order to confirm your interpretation that the comment is right, you quote a parallel phrase. For instance, Arame Vidovi Yered Mitzrayim. ולמד של יורב יעקב אבינו להשתקיע את מצרים לא גור שם או שנאמר ורוב כמו שנאמר עוצום כמו שנאמר ונצור פרפן ויצאים על השם מצרים כמו שנאמר ויוטיק דרמי ודובי the parasha which actually contains the story of Exodus in a very brief and terse fashion and you take דרמי ודובי each word you compare with a phrase from Exodus, and by this comparison, by this analogy, I mean, you arrive at certain conclusions. It means you interpret the parasha. We'll come later, but not this time, tonight, but the next time, next week. Yeah? This is the second element of the Agoda. The third element of the Agoda is Rabban Gamliel Oyeimeo, because Omar Shleshet Dvorim Eluba Pesach, the explanation of Pesach Matzah and Morel, and this is the third, and the fourth is Hallel. That's all. Basically four elements. I mean, the descriptive Agoda is three consists. I want to understand. The Agoda, when you say Agoda, it consists of two parts. One descriptive part, and one part of recital of praise. Hymn, the hymnal part of the Agoda. The descriptive part of the first half of the Agoda consists of three ingredients, of three elements. Gnus and Shvach. But Gnus and Shvach, there is a subdivision to Gnus and Shvach. Gnus and Shvach at the political, economic level, and Gnus and Shvach at a spiritual level. The Gnus and Shvach of a political nature is Avodah Mayinu. Of a spiritual nature is Mitzvah Eilev Zohar Yavsein and Mitzrayim. Above the Gnus and Shvach, there is the Droshas Rabban Gamliel, I mean Arame Vidovi. You have to recite the Parsha Arame Vidovi and interpret the Parsha. Two, above the third layer is Rabban Gamliel, that you have to point out in the three basic mitzvahs, Pesach, Matzah, Morer, and explain the symbolism involved in each of the mitzvahs. Pesach because God got passed over the houses and Matzah, it's a symbol of redemption, Morer, the symbol of slavery, oppression, so forth. But to announce the symbolic meaning of Pesach, Matzah, Morer, this is the third element of the descriptive Agoda. And as far as the narration is concerned, you conclude. But following the narration, you have to recite Hallel. We recite two chapters of Hallel. And this is the hymnal part of the Godhead. This is a Godhead, but within that frame of reference, framework, I mean, there are almost boundless possibilities how to fill in and how to explain and how to interpret and how to examine and so forth. That's what the Rambam says, Udvorim Elo Nikroim HaGodhead. I want you to understand this. This is very important. Now, let us see. The HaGodhead starts out with a strange, strange introductory, sentence. It's got two sentences, perhaps two sentences. The whole Achmuanyo, the whole of the son of the Arad in Israel, called the Chin Yisrael Yechel, called the Trish Yisrael Yitzchak. Shata Ochol Hashem Abba Barad Yisrael, Shata Avda Hashem Abba Becheret. Basically, before I'll analyze that, it is strange for a simple reason. Following Olach Mu'anyo, the Manishtana comes in. Basically, Manishtana, the question is raised, why matzah? It's the first question. So by saying Olach Mu'anyo, so you answer the question because the latter was actually, addressed to you. Yeah, you already said Olach Mu'anyo, that's all. It's very strange. And secondly, this is called the Chfin Yisrael Yichot, or the Tzrich Yisrael Yitzach, why this duplication? Called the Chfin means whoever is hungry. Kafna. Kafna is in Aramaic, hunger, starvation, famine. Called the Chfin, whoever is hungry, whoever is famished. Yisrael Yichot, called the Tzrich Yisrael Yitzach. And then suddenly, there is, without any transition, you proclaim Ashat Ocho, Lishon Abba Be'arad Yisrael, there are some who suggested that basically these two parts are in the wrong order. The Rosh Hashanah, Lashon Abba Be'arad Yisrael, Rosh Hashanah, Lashon Abba Be'arad, should come first. They used to say that any celebration after the home in Golas, any celebration is the same as at the end of the Seder. We say Lashon Abba Yerushalayim, you know that. In the same manner as in Kippur at the conclusion of the services, in Kippur, after Mila, you say Lashon Abba Yerushalayim. We used to start a celebration for a service also with the announcement, with the proclamation, Lashon Abba Yerushalayim. So when they sat down after Kiddush, when they sat down to recite the Haggadah, so we said, Roshato Ocho Lashon Abba Be'arad Yisrael, Roshato Avdi Lashon Abba Be'chir. We said it, by the way. Understand? This was the beginning. This was, so to say, the introduction to any service or to any kind of celebration. Then we said, Olach Ma'anyo, the Cholo Avasona Be'arad Yisrael, called the Chin Yisrael Yechel, called the Chin Yisrael Yisach. So these two sentences of Olach Mu'anyo called the Chin should follow the Roshat Ocho Lashon Abba Be'arad Yisrael or Sha'av Lashon Abba Be'chir. They say this was apparently customary for them to announce at all weddings, at all simchas, at all meals, to sit down to elaborate meal, or when they were about to celebrate an event or a yomtev, and any yomtev. They used to say Roshat Ocho Lashon Abba Be'arad Yisrael, Roshat Av Lashon Abba Be'chir. Because we find something of that custom in our proclaiming at the end of that body, conclusion of that body, Lashon Abba Be'yosholoyim. Oh, see, in Kippur night, Lashon Abba Be'yosholoyim. In Kippur night, in Kippur at the after Nivek. So that's how they used to start, how they used to command. The Seder commands with Roshat Ocho Lashon Abba Be'arad Yisrael, Roshat Av Lashon Abba Be'chir. After they proclaimed there, this was an announcement. They used to say, Olach Ma'anyo Dachol Avesona Be'arod Yisroim, called the Fin Yisrael Yechel, called the Tzuch Yisrael Yisrael. That's what some historians suggest. I don't believe it. First of all, I don't like that they try to distort certain order. The Agoda, not only the Agoda, any religious text has been preserved because countless generations have actually have guarded it with zeal and devotion. And I don't believe, the text was distorted. So apparently there is a transition. In my opinion, the whole Achmanya, they used to commence, the Seder commences with the whole Achmanya. Say Olach Ma'anyo Dachol Avetzon Adaro De Mitzrayim called the Fin Yisrael Yechel called the Tzuch Yisrael Yisrael. That's what some historians suggest. I don't believe it. First of all, I don't like that they try to distort certain order. The Agoda, not only the Agoda, any religious text has been preserved because countless generations have actually guarded it with zeal and devotion. And I don't believe, the text was distorted. So apparently there is a transition. In my opinion, the whole Achmanya, they used to commence, the Seder commences with the whole Achmanya, and the Shatter Ocho follows it. I don't believe, for them, to change an order and even Chumash means nothing. So certainly, the whole Achmanya, the whole Avesona, why not? So you say Shatoch Shnabo Baradi, so Shatavna Shnabo Chayim, and then secondly, it's just a guess on their part. It's hypothetical that every celebration and every elaborate meal or every simcha commenced with the solemn proclamation Shatoch Shnabo Baradi. So it's their own invention. They have no proof and they have no evidence. To substantiate that. But on the other hand, they have not explained what is the whole Achmanyo, the significance of the whole Achmanyo, the Achol Avesson of Ar Mitzrayim. What's the significance? Kol Echin Yisrael Yechol, Kol Tzuch Yisrael Yisrael. What Anyo is, whatever Anyo, basically the term Lachmo Anyo, I want to give you a few translations of Lachmo Anyo, because Lachmo Anyo, the term is not simple. It's mentioned in the Torah only once, in Deuteronomy, in Re. Lechemeni. What is Lechemeni? Is one interpretation in the Gemara in Pesachim. Lechemeni means Lechem She'emin Olav Dvorim Harve. The bread of recital. Why? When you eat your bread, you recite the Agoda. With the matzah. You first recite the Agoda and then you eat the matzah. It is the bread of many words. The bread of recital or of narration. This is Lachmo Anyo. Not Lechem Eini from Onei, Vonisa Vamarta. You shall say, Vonisa Vamarta. Say it loud, Vonisa Vamarta. Vonu Alvi in the Omru. And the Alvim should raise their voices, the Omru. That's the one you know. Lechem She'eini Malav Dvarim Harle. As a matter of fact, this interpretation has a halachic relevance that we require that the matzah be on the table while the Agoda is recited. You remove the matzah before Manishtano, but after Manishtano is concluded, you return the matzah on the table. Because during the recital of the Agoda, during the narration, the matzah should be on the table. See, lechem eini means the lechem, the bread of many words. The bread of narration, the bread of recital, the bread of a tale. Another interpretation is Holach Mohanyo, Lechemeni, means the bread of the poor. The bread of the poor, of the poor man. So it means it's in genitive. Smichus, Lechem Eini, Lechem Oni, Lechem Shalom Oni. because the oni who cannot afford to spend too much time on baking bread and have and baking bread, I mean, it accelerates actually the process of baking, and you cannot wait for the ise to rise, for the dough to rise, to ferment. What it takes, it just mixes water with flour and puts it in the oven. Lechem einim is lechem shel oni, another interpretation of the poor man. But then there is a third interpretation. Lechem einim, poor bread. Not the bread of the poor man, but lechem einim is the bread of poverty. But you have to understand it in English. In Hebrew it is smichus. It is two verbs, one in nominative, the other one in genitive, like any smichus form. But in English it's very hard to, if you say the bread of poverty, it conveys something else. It means the poor bread. Why is the bread poor? Because you must not mix the dough with anything but plain water. You cannot mix the dough with honey or butter or the flour, I mean. You cannot mix the flour with wine, oil, not pastry, because pastry is called matzah shiro, rich bread. Of course it's rich, there's fat, there's sugar. You just mix the flour with plain water. This is called matzah shiro. And the halacha is, at Pesach night, you cannot use for the Seder any egg matzah or any kind of matzah, because any egg matzah will be considered matzah shiro. Lechem einim is to be understood in simply physical terms. The lechem should only consist of two ingredients, of flour and water, plain water. So that's what we call matzah ashiro. A matzah ashiro is in other yitzhi de chavasi ba pesa. Or the Rambam says, aval in washin eso, you don't need, or you don't mix the flour, or you don't make the dough, be yayin e be shemen, either with wine or with oil, a cholov or milk, mishum lechem einim, because this would be called, if such a dough be formed, it would be considered not lechem einim, but lechem oshem, matzah shiro. Matzah shiro has been disqualified for the night of Pesach. Lechem einim. Yes. Now let us see. Try. I gave you three. Yes. The matzah, I mean the bread of recycle, of narration. Secondly, the bread of the poor man. It means it's baked quickly. You don't lose too much time. Third, the poor bread. It means just consisting of two ingredients, plain ingredients, flour and water. Now let me see, in the whole Achmanya, the way the Anya is introduced here, which interpretation would you apply to this sentence, phrase, whole Achmanya? You understand my question? No. The third one. The third one. Lachma anyo, I would say in Hebrew, lechem dal. Lechem dal means poor bread. To the exclusion of what? Of matzah shira, rich matzah. Rich, plain matzah. Rich in eggs, in sugar, in all kinds of confetti, pastry, etc. Yeah. Yacholu avasono be'aro dimetzroin. Of course, here, Yacholu avasono be'aro dimetzroin can be interpreted in two ways. One way, Yacholu avasono be'aro dimetzroin while they were slaves in the tribe. Because the slave simply was fed, I mean. First of all, because it was fed, I mean, the food which they gave the slave was of poor quality. Cheap of poor quality, it means there's no pastry, no. Without sugar, without anything, without wine or
oil, it's plain water on earth. The whole of the sun is slaves. Then it's very strange. Then we have usually the matzah. What is the matzah symbolic of? Then we have a new symbol of the matzah, which we don't mention later when we say that God. When we say that God, the matzah zushon eichem al shemo. So what do you say, matzah zushon eichem al shemo? Yeah? We speak the tzekom shalav esein ola achmit. It means they had no time to wait for the dough to rise, to ferment. Ashnigolim melech malcham lochim, I mean, Kadosh Baruch Hu, I mean, revealed himself and told them to go. So basically, matzah is a symbol of geula. It's a symbol of redemption, of victory. So it's not the, during their sojourn in Egypt as slaves, they ate matzah. There's no mention. On the contrary, the matzah, the geula came so quickly that they had no time, I mean, to prepare food. The Gam Tzedel also had. So the matzah is the symbol of what, of quick geula, of quick redemption, or sudden redemption. Spontaneous redemption, which somehow, I mean, unexpectedly, I mean, after they were confronted with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who was ready to redeem them and to take them out of Egypt, suddenly, without anticipating that this will happen so soon, and that's why the best they could do is to bake matzah. So they had no time, not because they were slaves or oppressed, on the contrary, they had no time, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I mean, quickened the process of geula and took them out, I mean, suddenly, correct? If you interpret the acholu of the son of the Aro de Mitzrayim in the same manner, it means the acholu of the son of that our forefathers ate, the Aro de Mitzrayim, in the land of Mitzrayim, when in the land of Mitzrayim, when? So then you have a second aspect of matzah, which is contradictory, basically, I mean, of course, I mean, of the symbolism of matzah, which Rabbi Gamliel has mentioned. But according to Gamliel, the symbolism of the symbol of matzah is redemption, quick gula, sudden gula, unexpected gula. And here's matzah symbolizes not gula, just like Moria symbolizes slavery, oppression. Simply, they had nothing else but matzah, nothing else but lechemeni, the acholu of the son of the Aro de Mitzrayim. Therefore, there are some mefarshim who are ready to say that the acholu of the son of the Aro de Mitzrayim is identical with matzah zushon eichem al shemo. The Aro de Mitzrayim means before they left. It means actually the way Rabbi Gamliel interprets, the way Rabbi Gamliel wants us to understand. So matzah retains its symbolism on the Abdullah. You understand? That's what some want to say. Al-Shumo, Al-Shumfish, Al-Shumfish, so it's Gula. And basically, the fact that matzah is a symbol of Gula is not just a problem, I mean, of accepting that symbol or the other symbol. It's a question of aloha, whether you have to lean during Achilles matzah or you eat matzah while you sit straight. You don't lean against your chair. Morel is consumed without a seder. Without a seder, you sit straight while you eat the morel. When you eat the matzah, you have to lean on your left side. Like that. Why? Because morel is symbolic of avdus. And matzah is symbolic characteristic of geula. Yeah. If you interpret the acholu of the son of Aro de Mitzrayim literally, they ate while they were slaves. So matzah has a double aspect. Basically, there is an inner contradiction within the matzah. On the one hand, the matzah symbolizes geula, on the other hand, slavery and oppression, you see. Of course, but there are many. The Chachmei Kabbalah, all the Chachmei Kabbalah, and even the Chachmei Chassidus, they have accepted the double symbolism of matzah. They've accepted the double symbolism of matzah. That matzah is not only geula, but matzah is slavery, avdus as well. The question is, why did the halacha, actually require a sibbe for matzah? It is all right, it's to be, can be resolved. But they, the Chachmei Kabbalah, in particular the Chachmei Chassidus, mainly the Tanya, in Yisider, has accepted, without any reservation, that matzah lends itself to double symbol. On the one hand, matzah is the bread of the slave, and the same bread of the slave, God has converted into the symbol of Geula. God has taken the symbol of slavery and converted it into the symbol of God. If you prefer this interpretation, then the whole of the Sonna coincides perfectly with Rabbi Gamliel. So matzah, the symbolism of matzah is just, the symbol of matzah is one. I'm not too sure that those who want to reconcile the Achol HaMesona Ba'ar HaMetzroim with HaChmigalei Melech Macham Loch HaKadosh Baruch Hu Golom, that those who want to reconcile are right. In my opinion, the Chachmei Kabbalah are right. That matzah, there is a double symbolism to matzah. Matzah is the bread of the slave, and matzah is the bread of the person who has been redeemed. And it is typical of Yahadus, that Yahadus takes not a different symbol, but the same symbol, and converts it and transforms it into something which represents Geula, redemption. Now, that's what I wanted just to tell you. You should know, the two possibilities, the two pshotim. This called the Chin Yesev Yechel, called the Tzrich Yesev Yipsach, in my opinion, it has a completely different meaning. The Gemara tells us in Ta'anis, Dafchov Amid Beis, if I'm not mistaken, that whenever Ravuna was a rich man, a wealthy man, whenever Ravuna sat down to eat the meal, he used to open the doors, he used to send out his butler or whoever he was, his servant, and they used to announce, called the Tzrich Yosef Yech, whoever is in need, let him come and eat. The Gemara quotes Ravuna. The Gemara in Tanya is Daf Chof Amid Beis. Called Yitzrich Yesev Yech. Apparently, what Ravuna used to do every time he sat down to a meal, we do it on Pesach. Why on Pesach? Called the Chid. Rav Amram Goren says, Rav Matisyo Goren, excuse me. Rav Matisyo Goren says, Ravuna lived in the 3rd century. It's an old custom in the 3rd century. Rav Matisyo Goren, who lived in the 9th century, Rav Matisyo Goren, writes in Chimes Hagenim, Umina Kol Yisrael, it's customary throughout the Bible. Fortunate brothers. And the night of Pesach, that's Rav Matisyo. Of course, the minhag Moischitim fits in into this whole picture. Yeah. So apparently, it was not just called the chvin, was not just one closed his door and locked the door and pulled down the window shades and the Venetian blinds and said called the chvin Yisrael Yechel. But it's actually called the chvin Yisrael Yechel used to be a message. It used to be apparently disseminated announced days before Pesach. That's what Rav Matisyo Goren. Days before Pesach used to be announced in the community, called the Chvin Yisrael Yechel, called the Tzrich Yisrael Yitzchak. It was a reality then. It was not just a ceremony. It was a reality. Why Pesach has been singled out? Same. And the rest of the year. Yes, why Pesach? I want you to understand, first of all, it was not just a statement made, at the night of Pesach, while the doors were closed, no one heard. It was simply, they used to send out, Shaleach Shluchim, Rav Matisyo Goren says. You send messengers, agents, to pick them up, to find them, and to bring everybody who is unfortunate, who was who was poor and was alone, every lonely person, I mean, into the home of the more fortunate brother in order to celebrate Pesach. I mean, this. So of course, I mean, it was retained in our, in the Agoda just as a phrase, but it was not a phrase, it was a historical reality. I mean, and we understand it fits beautifully in with the Moishchitim institution. Also, what is the purpose of the Moishchitim institution? Is to provide everybody, I mean, is all we need. Yes. So why Pesach was singled out of all holidays, now the entire year? Why is Pesach has been singled out? There are two reasons. There are basically two reasons. Why is Pesach? Usually, it should have been, this institution should have been actually introduced, not only with reference to Pesach, but as regards all holidays. Because in all holidays, wherever the Torah speaks of Simcha, wherever the Torah speaks of Simcha, of rejoicing, in the Samachto, the only the Torah enumerates. Atu, Vincho, Vitecho, you and thy son, thou and thy son, Va'alevi, Va'geir, Va'yosin, Va'almona, Asher Bekabecho. And the stranger, and the orphan, and the widow, and the Levi was the poor man, and the Levi, poor man, Bishrech. And you know what the Ram writes, that if one, whoever, and apparently, the way the Ram describes Yontev, they used to open their doors at Yontev, the gates of it. The chatzeres, the yards were open completely ajar, the doors were open ajar, and anybody who wanted to come in and eat and participate and share, he was allowed to do so. And the Ram says that Mishenel Dalses Chatzere, whoever locks the gates of his home, Venemachil or Niim, the Ram is very strict and very. He writes, Ukshechel Vesheise, when he eats and drinks and feasts, Chayav Lachil Agira Yosin Almona, and Shore Niim and Lolim. Should feed, should also have the Geir, the stranger, and the Yosin and Almona, and Shore Niim and Lolim. All those are unfortunate and poor, they should also share in his, whatever he has. Avu Mishenel Dalsit Chatzir, whoever locks the doors of his house. Veichel Vesheise, who Bono Vishte, and only he shares with his children and his members of Hala, and his wife. Vinimachel Mashkelanim, and does not let others share in his meal. Ulemore Nefesh, Ezu Simchas Mitzvah, it is not the Simcha which the Torah has decreed, and the Simchas Kreise, it's his own selfish feast. Valele Neemar, that whatever their offers and their sacrifices are just abominable, then I don't approve of them. No. Ah? This is it. Pesach, apparently, this is a rule which applies to all holidays. As a matter of fact, even to Purim. The Matonis Levyenim, the institution of Matonis Levyenim, is also the same. Why was the institution of Matonis Levyenim introduced? Because when you share with your friends, Mishleach Moni is sharing with your friends. So share particularly with those who are discriminated by destiny, by Hashpach. Yes. But this is number one. Pesach was singled out from all other holidays, even though it's important. The same precept of tzedakah, of chesed, of sharing and making and having someone rejoice with me is applicable to all holidays, to all seasons where simcha was and with regard to which simcha was decreed. So it is mainly important for Pesach. Why is it so important for Pesach? Yes. It's all right, but that applies. No, first of all, yes,
First of all, in Korban Pesach is interesting. In Korban Pesach is Velokachu Shcheinei HaKorev Eilov. The Korban Pesach, the Torah speaks, we read it this morning, Velokachu Shcheinei HaKorev Eilov. He and the neighbor, the next door neighbor, should bring together, they should bring the Paschal lamb. You see. And there is Roman Doma says that a single person cannot bring the Korban. If he doesn't share the Korban with someone else, he may be in Pesach al Yochid. Only a group, a Chapure, brings the Pesach. When I mean we share the Pesach with someone else. Is in Pesach already who Shcheinei HaKorev Eilov. It means regardless who the neighbor is, rich or poor, rich or poor. And if the neighbor cannot afford to buy or share in the expense, so he has to provide it. It's already in Pesach there is an allusion of somehow of allusion to the fact that a man should not simply enjoy whatever he possesses alone, but should share whatever he has with others. From Pesach, the lokach who sell a boys or the family shares already. But if there's a lamb is too much for one family. Family is small, so the lokach who shcheinei HaKorev Eilov. Let him see that the neighbor, the next door neighbor, shares in the Pesach, in the Paschal lamb. This itself shows that there is the sense of togetherness, of simply of being together, and sense of compassion and sympathy, and the readiness to help, to extend help, was emphasized. And I mean, in the parsha of Korban Pesach. Secondly, there is something else involved. I said so many times about it. When the Jews came to Mitzrayim, they were not a people, you know, that very well. Yishuv Beis Ibo, just a clan. When God addressed himself to Moses, I mean, before the Geulah, he already used the term not, a term which denotes or signifies a people. Didn't he say to him, Ishmos? Didn't he say to him, Roi roisi esoni ami asher b'mitzroyim v'sakosom shomati mipnei neksov ki yodati es machilov v'ato lecho v'eshlochacho el pare v'eitze es ami v'nei Yisroel b'mitzroyim. Ishmos, Gimel, Pasuk Zion, Shmeis Gimel, Pasuk Zion, and Pasuk Yud. And I told you many times that the term Ami means together. Im. Terms Am is from Im, being with. And people cannot be called Im if there is no solidarity. Cannot be called Am if there is no solidarity. When you call Am, it means it is indicative of a sense of solidarity on the part of the individual, and also, I mean, the readiness to share both joys and cares and travail and suffering together. This is the sense of solidarity, of compassion and solidarity. This is Am, in. It's said like that. There's no doubt about it, philologically. So, actually, so it means that Gulas Mitzrayim, the fact of why were the Jews worthy of Gulah, why were they worthy of Gulah? Spiritually, they were not worthy. I mean, Alolev David Zorev, Alolev Zorev. You know the complaint of Uzo, of the representative of Mitzrayim, on the seventh day of Pesach. He said, I mean, why do you prefer the Jew to the Egyptian? They are both idolaters. They both, I mean, Megadle Bleres and all of Megadle Bleres. Spiritually, I mean, the Jew in Egypt was not, I mean, superior to the to his oppressor. I mean, spiritually, he was not, the slave was not superior to the oppressor. No wonder. So the reason why the Jews were taken out of Egypt and were freed is not because of their spiritual grandeur, but for another reason. Because of what? Because simply they were charitable. They helped each other. They helped each other. There was a feeling of solidarity among the Jews. They shared whatever they had with each other. And that's why they are called Am. They were together, they lived together. There was coexistence. There was interrelatedness. There was association, since any group, any association is based upon a sense of solidarity. If you have no solidarity, you have no association. And this sense of solidarity, this sense of sympathy, that's what is responsible for the gulag. That's what Rabbi Sibber Misalevi says, actually. This is responsible for the gulag. That's why the Rabbeinu Shem said, Roi roisi esoni ami asher b'mitzroim, Oni, of my people, it means the people who live together. Asher b'mitzroim v'zakosom shomati. Yeah, it's very interesting. Should have said mipnei nekseyem. Zakosom is plural. Should have said mipnei nekseyem. Yodati es machiveyem. And the strange is that the pasuk says roi roisi esoni ami asher b'mitzroim v'sakosom shomati plural mipnei neksov singular ki yodati es machivov, and singular for him. Why does the pasuk mean change from plural into singular? Because basically each one felt also the pain and the suffering of his next door neighbor, of his fellow man. Kishomati mipnei neksovi, they reacted as if they were, if they had been just one individual, one person. Kiyodati es machivov. Machivov of whom? Of 600,000 Jews. But it was the pain of one person. And that's why that Pesach is the time of Chesed and Tzedakah. Because the sense of solidarity is responsible on the part of the Jew, is responsible for the Gula. As a matter of fact, this sense of solidarity has never disappeared, has never vanished. A Jew, I mean, whether spiritually, I mean, whether spiritually he meets the standards which the Torah has put up for him is a different story. But as far as solidarity of the Jew, the sense of responsibility for each other, and the commitment to his people, and the devotion of the individual to the people as such, and simply in the readiness to help and to extend the aid, has always been perhaps the most beautiful characteristic trait of the Jewish people. They have never lost it. This trait has never lost it. Whether the Jew is a bit assimilated or is observant, but there is this trait, ki yadati es machivav, this trait of ami, to be together. Unless one actually drifts completely, but whoever didn't drift completely, no apostasy involved, or no vulgar assimilation is involved, is this sense of solidarity has never vanished on the part of the Jew. You can see now what's going on. Our solidarity with people in Eretz Yisrael, and vice versa. It's not so easy for the Jew in the diaspora, for the Western Jew to unite with our brother in Eretz Yisrael. There are many problems involved. Our sympathies for them, are misinterpreted by our enemies. many enemies, and we speak of divided loyalties and so forth on. But the sense of solidarity has never been suppressed. No enemy, no foe has ever succeeded in splitting the people. No. And if, I'll be frank with you, if in the 1940s I had doubts, and we have sinned that time, because if we had responded to the call for help, which actually came across the ocean from the various ghettos in Poland and Lithuania and the Baltic lands, we might have saved hundreds of thousands of Jews. We did not respond to that call. I mean, I thought at that time that the Jewish community is falling apart. There is no more any feeling of solidarity, of being together, of living together, of suffering together, of fighting together. Alright, of course, it was a terrible crime on our part. That's why I don't like to criticize Roosevelt or Churchill, because we have sinned as well. I mean, since we are not, we haven't purged ourselves of the great sin and the great crime we have committed, tolerating the destruction of 6 million Jews. But nowadays, with regard to Benin Israel, we have responded in a manner which is worthy, actually. Like members of a proud race, without cowardice and without any reservations. So the sense of solidarity still prevails among the Jews. And Pesach is basically the holiday of solidarity. If the Jews in Egypt, I want you to understand, the Jews in Egypt we have a very funny picture. Not everybody was a slave. There are slaves and there are masters. Masters among them. Master was a slave to an Egyptian master. But it wasn't, the slavery was not uniform, it was not homogeneous. There were various degrees of slavery. The Chazal tell us that the tribe of Levi, has never been enslaved, has never been oppressed. And most probably the masses have been oppressed. The richer, the people who, the aristocracy of the Jewish aristocracy, the people who were rich and wealthy, apparently paid high taxes. But there is no doubt that they didn't have to work physically. But there was unity of purpose. There was a sense of solidarity, responsibility. Each one felt the pain of his next door neighbor, of his fellow man. And that's what brought about the Gula. That's what the Rebbeinu Shlom emphasized to Moshe. Es oni ami. You could have said es oni bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim. Why is oni ami? Because there are people already. There is interrelatedness. There is a sense of sympathy, of compassion, of readiness to help. And that's why Pesach, before we sit down, we make that declaration. And I interpret Be'aro de Mitzrayim means simply, in the land of Mitzrayim while they were slaves. And the Acholu means something else, not only they ate. They share the bread with each other. The acholu in Hebrew means not only eating, they ate, they share the bread. If one had a matzah, the other one didn't have any. So what did he do? He split the matzah into two and passed half a matzah on to his unfortunate brother who could not afford to bake matzah. He's so poor that he didn't have the little flour and the water. He couldn't mix flour with water. He didn't have any time. The acholu avesono that our forefathers have shared with each other, the aro de Mitzrayim, the land of Mitzrayim. And I want you to understand something else. Here is called the Chvim Yeisi V'Yechel. Please read carefully. Called the Chvim Yeisi V'Yechel. Whoever is hungry should come and eat. Called the Tzrich, whoever is in need, Yesei V'Yifsach, should come and celebrate the Seder. Yifsach means celebrate with us. To make the Pesach, it means to celebrate the Seder. Why this duplication? Isn't the duplication redundant? redundant. It's plain redundancy. I call the chfin yeseh v'yechel, call the truch yeseh v'yitzach. Why this duplication? The answer apparently is as follows. You see, call the chfin whoever is hungry, yeseh v'yechel should come and eat. Call the truch, what does it mean, call the truch? No, yes, what is called the truch? I mean, you understand a little bit of Hebrew. What is called the truch? He said, called the queen, whoever is hungry. What's the difference between being hungry and being in need? What do you say? No. It's nonsense. Ah? Exactly. Exactly. Called the tzrich means he is in need. What kind of need? He's not in need of bread. Because whoever is in need of bread, there's a shortage of matzah, is called the queen. The chin means he's hungry now. If he doesn't have enough food, he's called the chin. That is called the trich. He wants to celebrate. He's someone else. He's alone. He has a lot of matzah, a lot of wine he can do. He's not in need for food. He can afford, to celebrate the Passover. But called the trich, he's in need for something else. He's lonely, he has no home, he has no family. There are so many ways. He called it Tzrich. He doesn't say Yeseh v'yechal. The invitation is not v'yechal, he should eat. The invitation is he should be with us. He should spend the Pesach with us. Yeseh v'yifsach means to celebrate with us. You see, it is a plea or invitation addressed to poor people and to lonely people. The lonely people might be a millionaire. It's completely irrelevant. Call the tzrich, whoever needs us, needs me, wants to spend the Pesach with me, Yeseh v'yifsach should come and celebrate. Not v'yichel. The idea is not v'yichel, has enough food at home. V'yifsach means to celebrate. Yeseh v'yifsach. Why do I mention Olachmo Anyo? I could have said Olachmo, because I said before, the Anyo is already somehow anticipates a question about matzah, and I give the answer before the question was addressed to me, and this makes no sense. I believe that here is involved another concept. There is a Mishneh in Aseches HaPeilim, a very strange Mishneh. The Mishnah is, for instance, if I hire a day laborer, so I have got to feed him the day he works. From here, he has got, I have to provide him his food, I have to give him his meals. So there is a Mishnah like that. It's a question. If I have not stipulated what kind of food I'm going to give him, he can demand from me the most delicious food and a delicacy. She called Yisroel Bnei Melachim Imo. All Jews are princes. And is entitled to the same treatment as a prince is entitled, as the son of the king is entitled. So there was a formula when they hired a day laborer. They wanted to do some work. They used to write in the agreement, or orally, stipulate. Ein loch elai, all you can demand from me, elo pas v'kitni es bilvad, just bread and some vegetables, some beans. V'kitni es is beans, some vegetables, but nothing more. But if he had not stipulated, so the day laborer can ask him, for the most luxurious, for the rarest, delicacies and the best food possible, which only kings and princes eat. And don't forget, that time, Talmudic times, so many, 1800 or 1700 years ago, the difference as far as dietary habits are concerned between a king and an ordinary man was tremendous. See, now actually there is equalization of diets. The king eats the same food as I do, or you do, there is no difference, basically. First of all, delicious food does not mean healthy food. Secondly, there is certain control on the part of the rich man as far as his dietary habits are concerned. Yeah. But in antiquity, not only antiquity, but even in Middle Ages, I mean, the dietary habits of the king, the dietary habits of a plain person, they were completely incongruous, they were completely incommensurable. So in the law is that if I have not stipulated properly that all he can claim as far as food is concerned is passive kidneys, bread and some vegetables, so then he may demand, he may make the most fantastic demands upon me as far as his meals are concerned. Shekol Yisroel Bnei Melachim. I want you to understand, it's a very strange aloha. Olach, so now if I address an invitation to those who are in need to come to eat with me, and please listen carefully, and I tell them that I'll feed them so they can have the same claim to me as the Mishnah tells us about the day laborer. They can say we are not satisfied with this type of food, we want a better type of food. So they announce, the announcement in the Yiddish, I want you to understand, it's a very strange aloha. Olach, so now if I address an invitation to those who are in need to come to eat with me, please listen carefully, and I tell them that I'll feed them so they can have the same claim to me as the Mishnah tells us about the day laborer. They can say we are not satisfied with this type of food, we want a better type of food. So they announce, the announcement when they used to, it was practice. Whenever they hired a day laborer, they used to tell him, never mind, they used to agree on the wage. And secondly, all you can demand is pas v'kitnis. If he hadn't stipulated pas v'kitnis, then the laborer can make all kinds of demands. The laborer may ruin the employer. The employee may ruin the employer, not so much as the wage is concerned, but as far as the food, the quality of food is concerned. Mishnah, first Mishnah, Asecha Sapelem. Asecha, Kol Yisroel Bnei Melachim Imo, every Jew is a king or a son of a king, he can melee claim to the most. The best reached. So now if I address myself and I send an invitation, this was not just a formality, this used to send out messengers inviting people to come. So called the Chvin Yisrael Yechel, called the Tzrich Yisrael Yifsach, whoever came used to say, I expected a better meal. I'm not joking, a better meal. I thought that you served me some different items. So the announcement is, we just invite for Olach Mo'anyo. It's not a joke, I'm not joking here. We just invite for Lach Mo'anyo. And whoever knows the Mishnah, the Secha Sapeyalim, Ein lo chalai alo pas v'kitnias govar. And pas v'kitnias is exactly what Lach Mo'anyo is. O Lach Mo'anyo de acholu avasono be'arod v'tzrayim. I extend an invitation just to share Lach Mo'anyo. The medium bread or the medium meal which I have. And if whoever is satisfied with the Lach Mo'anyo and is hungry, he called the Chvin Yisrael. Whoever is satisfied with Lach Mo'anyo, with the meager meal and the poor food, is called the Tzrir, but he doesn't do it. He might have, the fellow might say, at home I left a better, I had a better meal. Alright, I didn't want to spend the Seder night alone, but if I had known, the poor quality of food you are going to serve me, I wouldn't have come. Call the Tzrich, whoever wants to be with friends or celebrate the Passover in company, is Yisrael Yifsach, but the invitation is just sent out for Olach Mo'anyo. The Acholu, why do I emphasize the Acholu, I was on about trying to emphasize
The meal will not be, will be just as meager as the meals of a slave, of slaves. Nothing more. And now you understand the transition to a Shato Ocho, the Shona Boba Arad Israel. This is basically, it's not just a transition, it's a transition, it's a promise. Roshato Ocho. Now, this year, we are here. And here, I cannot serve you anything else. But Roshona Abo Ba'arod Israel, there you'll get a better meal. I'm not joking. And he explains, why is Ba'arod Israel? I mean, the food will be of a better, higher quality. For sure, because Roshato Avde. I am a slave. So I cannot afford anything else. The Shona Abo B'necherin, I'll treat you like a free man treats his man. Now, I can treat you only as a Nevet treats his fellow Nevet. I have nothing else. This is. If I can afford, if I can't afford, I can't. I mean, this first place, I cannot afford. I mean, if I can afford, I mean, to give him all luxuries. That's the whole Achmanyo. Basically, the whole Achmanyo is to renew our pledge of solidarity. Basically, it's the whole Achmanyo. It's a renewal of pledge of solidarity among the Jewish people. Solidarity between individual and individual, and solidarity between individual and the Jewish community as a whole. Because this sense of solidarity is, according to Chazal, as being was responsible for the redemption of the Jew from Egypt. The Rebbeinu Shlom said to Abraham, "Kedir yizracho beret leilohem, va'avodum vinu meisom arba meishano." The Gemara said, "Ye asher yavedu dono nechi." What is the Rechush Godel they took out of Mitzrayim? What is the Rechush Godel? What was the great fortune they took out of Egypt? What did they take out of Egypt? Ah? They became a people. Arami Evidovi, we read it Pesach and Agode. Arami Evidovi, Vayered Mitzrayimo, Vahishom Ligay Godel. What do you mean Ligay Godel? Numerically? Oh no. Numerically, we are not very strong. Numerically, very strong, 600,000 people. The Gegodl means a great people. A great people. Solidarity, the first foundation of greatness of a people. If there's no solidarity, people cannot be great. Because finally, people, alright, sociologically, it's more than the sum total. But at least the people must be the sum total of the individuals which constitute the people. If there is no solidarity between individual and individual, there is no sense of responsibility, there is no readiness to share, and there is no readiness to commit yourself, I mean, to the welfare of the people or to the welfare of your fellow man, so there is no Gegodel. So basically Mitzrayim, what Avdu, slavery and oppression and maltreatment, have taught the Jew, he says, to be to a sense of unity with the people. And not only Mitzrayim, the Middle Ages, I mean. After all, why? Actually, Jews distinguish themselves, as Balad's talking about this chart. Goyim have no concept what the talk is. You have sometimes philanthropists among Gentiles, and they give fantastic amounts of money. But the plain individual's doke, I mean, the Jew, Gentiles don't know. I mean, they don't know what it is. The Greeks didn't know. The Greeks did not know what Zdoki is. In general, the word, the term chesed, was alien to Greeks. They have not term for it, for chesed. To the Greeks, is virtue, is courage, I mean, truth. Those are the ethical virtues. Chesed didn't mean it. You take the table of virtues, which was composed by Aristotle and by Plato, even Socrates. Chesed is unknown. Chesed and Socrates didn't understand it. They didn't understand what it was.
courage he has. Feel that battle? Oh, yeah. That a goy understand. That's why a goy was so impressed in 1967. Courage. Courage. Courage, yes. Abdullah Hoge, Haskell Hoge, this is a lot. But the fact that one who does not have should be held by the individual. Now in America, the welfare state, you know, it is changing. Actually, now the welfare state is a Jewish institution. It's a Jewish institution. The welfare state, actually, the way Chazal described a meluche, a state, means a welfare state. The state should take care of the poor. The community takes care of the poor. What's the difference? The community used to take care of the poor. It's a welfare community. We have no statehood. The sense of solidarity. What taught us solidarity? You know, what taught us? Oppression and persecution and exile. The Rambam says, "V'chol Yisrael ke'achim eino." All Jews are brothers. Umi yirachim aleihem. Im le'ach. Who will have mercy on them if not the brother? It's exactly the sense of solidarity. Is all Achmahanya, basically the purpose of all Achmahanya, means the renewal of the sense of solidarity and actually a proclamation that they are one people and we are ready to help and to share. And Pesach night is the night of sharing. But however, as I told you, this is the basic idea which underlies the whole Achmahanya. Because without sharing, so the whole Seder becomes meaningless. Without manifesting and demonstrating the sense of solidarity and responsibility and unity and the readiness to share and to participate. But here, you know, after all, it's his old problem as the Mishnah. Here, when you extend an invitation, and it was a historical reality, so you always have to enlighten the fellow whom you invite what you are ready to give him. Not to arouse hopes in him, which will never come true, and not to simply, to deceive him. And that's what you say, Olach Mo'anyo, the Achola of the Son of God. This is the bread, this is the meager meal, we invite for that meal. If you want to share, you are welcome. And we promise that whenever we'll be redeemed, we'll serve a better meal. I'll treat him. Whoever will see the Mishnah, look up the Mishnah, Aseches HaPeilim, you'll find it. This was a part of the agreement between any day laborer or any wage earner and his employer. That he has no claims as far as the meal is concerned. This is the same nusche, the same stipulation was incorporated to Olach Mo'anyo. So this is the introduction. Of course, no. Next we'll take up the Manishtana Laila and we'll set off now. Yisgadel, Yisgadel, Shmei Rabo.